Good evening and welcome to the special musical tribute to the late Peter Klatso, who left us on the 29th of December last year. That was a solo marimba piece he composed entitled Inyanga, referring to a traditional healer, inspired as he was by both that instrument and by the many facets of South African culture and its musical traditions. There were also many facets to Peter's character: teacher, musician, friend, mentor, cook and cat lover, and a presenter on this station for many years. But it's Peter Klatso, the composer, on whom we will focus tonight. Peter completed a doctoral degree in composition at the University of Cape Town, or UCT, where he lectured for 37 years, retiring in 2010 as Professor Emeritus and Director of the South African College of Music. Of course, a program such as this is subjective, and there simply is too much material, too many recordings, too many memories to be shared in just 2 hours. And so it's my hope that tonight's program will be amongst the first of many tributes on FMR to Peter's life and his contribution to music. So do join me, John Woodland, for the next 2 hours as I attempt to showcase the diversity of his compositional output while revealing something of the man behind the music. So let us start with a work composed for junior musicians, Macumazahn, based on a poem that recounts the bewitching characteristics of a wonderful snake that is able to lure very young children on magical water journeys. The piece was commissioned for the Roodepoort International Musikaestedford and is played here by Johannesburg-based pianist Jill Richards, who has recorded so much music by Peter and other South African composers. Opening up tonight's musical tribute on FMR to the late Peter Klatzow, that was Jill Richards playing the atmospheric Macumazahn. Peter James Leonard Klatzow was born on the 14th of July, 1945, in Springs, Gauteng, to Cyril and Winifred Klatzow. When he was 19 years old, he attended the Royal College of Music in London, where he studied composition with Bernard Stevens, piano with Kathleen Long, and orchestration with Gordon Jacob. In that year, 1964, he won several of the College Composition Prizes as well as the Royal Philharmonic Prize for Composition, which was open to any Commonwealth composer under the age of 30. He spent the following year, 1965, in Italy and Paris, where he studied with French music educator Nadia Boulanger. Peter recalled, "She never offered any compliments, And when I approached the question of paying for the lessons, she cut me short. Are we here to discuss accountancy or music? No payment was ever accepted. Upon returning to South Africa in 1966, he worked at the SABC in Johannesburg as a music producer before being appointed to UCT in 1973. Identifying as an Anglican, Peter composed much religious music, encouraged by Barry Smith, who was then organist and master of the choristers at St. George's Cathedral in Cape Town. In an interview, Peter said, "He had an excellent choir, the St. George's Singers, who gave first performances of many of my works. The prayers and dances of praise from Africa were especially commissioned from Peter for a performance at the Three Choirs Festival in Worcester in the UK in 1996, where it was indeed premiered by the St. George's Singers, conducted by Barry, himself a regular visitor to Worcester, where he conducted at Three Choirs and Elgar Festivals. The words are taken from an African prayer book, a collection of texts compiled by the late Archbishop Emeritus Desmond Tutu, and which draws together a vast diversity of spiritual material. And these texts were also used for Peter's three spiritual nocturnes, which we'll hear later tonight. The prayers and dances of praise from Africa comprise seven items, four prayers interspersed with three dances, originally scored, in fact, for brass quintet, but eventually rewritten for marimba duet, perhaps more appropriate. The instrumental interludes develop motifs which have been presented in the previous song, extending them both thematically and rhythmically. And the four choral movements are titled All You Big Things Bless the Lord, Great Is, O King, Our Happiness, Cover Me with the Night, and the Great Amen.
Sensitive, 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 sens
one of Peter Klatzow's best-loved works, The Prayers and Dances of Praise from Africa, sung by the Oxford-based group Komotio, with Andrew Kerr and David Lewis Marimbas, directed by Matthew Berry, who together have done so much to promote Peter's music abroad. It's sometimes easy to forget the human behind the composer, who can also be a teacher, mentor, close friend. I've invited a colleague of Peter's, composer Adrian Moore, who's currently based in Hamburg, to share a few words with us about Peter.
I have incredibly fond memories of Peter, both as a student and as a colleague, and also as a friend. He was my mentor and guide, and had a very caring and gentle way with students who were working hard and students who were, somewhat talented. As a colleague, I shared his office at the South African College of Music, and for quite a few years we shared the space. We'd meet every morning before university started at about 7:30, sometimes earlier, and either he or I would have to bring some form of cookies or chocolates in, and for a few minutes we'd just stare out the bay window and talk about life, after which scores would come out, his and mine, and we'd peruse and we'd discuss. And yes, I will say that Peter was very rarely difficult with me, in the sense that he always provided incredibly sound knowledge. A large part of it was about orchestration. We spoke about colors and, you know, the deeply entrenched knowledge he had from his experience filtered through in such a way that I felt it was an easygoing experience. And I was certainly lucky because I managed to, you know, learn so much from him every morning. But yes, I got to see the inner workings of how he worked, and that was very, very joyous. One of the pieces we looked at quite a lot of his was the Spiritual Canticles, which I ended up having to premiere in the baritone part at the last minute due to the baritone falling ill a few days prior to the performance, and it's a 14-minute work. But I had looked at the music prior to that, and I'd also been helping the mezzo-soprano with her part. But what was really fascinating about that was when we spoke about parallel harmonies and tonality and also landing. I mean, I don't want to get too technical, but in the end, Peter always spoke about, you know, because he had a non-tonal or an atonal patch for quite a long time, one of the real considerations was how we push tonality in such a way that it's still listenable. And one of the tricks he and I like to share, or at least experience quite often, especially in the canticles, was parallel movements of chords going up. There are lots of places where harmonies literally move up, almost like Debussy. And then their arrival point is the really important part, that you keep that sort of tonal center, whichever that might be. Yes, and that was the whole point of the spiritual body, you know, the spirit leaving the body and then arriving somewhere. So that's a personal experience about, you know, working with these compositions. I don't know, I could speak for a very long time, so I will also mention that I was very privileged in that whenever he wrote something new or whenever he was writing music, he'd share it with me. And outside of some proof checking, it was really a wonderful experience to go back and forth and ask questions as to, you know, harmonies chosen or melodies or, you know, where they arrive or why they don't, or colors or register. There was so much to talk about. And so in doing so, I also learned a lot about all the big composers that we know, all the big names, but obviously also less known ones too. But he had a particular connection to Chopin and Tchaikovsky. And I just recall, you know, playing some Chopin. What would happen in the mornings is quite often I'd have to go sit at the piano and play through one of his new works or one of my new works. And then sometimes I'd have to, not have to, but choose to side read whatever was on the piano, which was, as I said, either Bach, Tchaikovsky, or Chopin, but Chopin more often than not. And then I'd read through something, and I remember one particular morning, I was trying to side read the third scherzo, which is not that easy to sight read. And at some point, Peter was sipping his coffee and he looked up at me and he just said, "No, you're botching up Chopin. We cannot do this. Come, let's work on it together." And so then I played, you know, left hand and he played right hand where it was possible. And we sort of messed around and then I played it again. And a few weeks of just fiddling around and then the piece came together. But that was his way, you know, music was everything. I really will miss him very much.
Some insights into Peter Klatzow, the teacher, mentor, and friend. Thank you, Adrian Moore. Now, about this next work for piano, Barcarolle, which was written in 2005. Peter himself wrote, "In 1925, Arnold Schoenberg went to Venice to conduct the first performance of his Serenade, Opus 24. It's a little difficult to imagine the angry, confrontational Schoenberg taking any delight in the pleasures offered by La Serenissima. Not unexpectedly, he managed to offend his host. Nevertheless, there are intimations of a gondola and of boat song in the second of Schoenberg's three piano pieces, Opus 11. References to this magnificent piece of his weave in and out of my Barcarolle. It's played here by the London-based teacher and pianist René Resnick. perhaps you too could imagine the rocking of the gondola or the influences there of composers such as Chopin and Debussy. That was the Bach Carole, subtitled Arnold Schoenberg in Venice, by Peter Klatso, played by René Resnick. In an obituary that appeared in Daily Maverick shortly after Peter's passing, J. Brooks Spector recorded the following reflections from Richard Koch on the now late composer. Ever since I started on my path as a musician, I have known Peter Klatso. He was a lecturer at UCT when I started there as a student in 1968, and I've kept in close contact with him ever since, returning to South Africa in 1980, after 8 years abroad. He has influenced countless young composers through those years, and several of them have had distinguished careers. I have performed many of his works, both for orchestra and choir. His return to a type of neo-romanticism in his later years meant that his music was available and relatively easy for amateurs to perform, and so my choirs readily took on his works. He was composer in residence of the Johannesburg International Mozart Festival in 2015, and I was amazed at the speed of his work. He told me often that he would compose every day. If no commissions were being worked on, he would write a song. So I guess there's a lot of unperformed material waiting. Let's hope that we start to see some of those appearing on our concert programs. Now, what do you do if a scary monster has kidnapped you because of your magical voice, and not one of your brave brothers can save you? Well, you use your own initiative, of course. Peter set to music Tintiniane, a beautiful tale written by Corley Ferry and narrated by the late Yvonne Banning, in a work that echoes Prokofiev's Peter and the Wolf, as well as the sounds and textures of African music.
Long, long ago, there lived a girl who had a voice as beautiful as a magic songbird, and they called her Tintiniane. She lived with her father and three brothers at the foot of a mountain. Every morning she woke them with her sweet singing. Her joyful song followed the men as they left to hunt or fish, and her voice soared like a rising lark as she worked at her daily tasks. As darkness fell, she greeted the stars with trills as sweet as the little brown warblers. As her singing rose in the evening air, and Gorongorui, the monster of the deep forest, heard her. Greedily he crept closer to listen. I shall catch her and keep her for my own, he thought. Then I shall be able to listen to her night and day. In the dead of night, while her father and brothers slept, he came to their hut. As stealthily as a jackal taking his prey, Ngorongorui took the sleeping Tintiniane from her mat and carried her away into the depths of the forest. deep, deep among the trees, where the sun never shines and where the light of moon and stars never comes. Tintiniani awoke and stared in terror at the hideous creature.
"Sing to me," growled
Ngorongorui. Tintiniani sang. She sang and sang, and whenever she stopped singing, Ngorongorui ordered her to
sing again.
She sang her lovely song until at last she fell faint with weariness to the ground. When she came to herself again, she quickly took her voice out of her throat and hid it in a little nutshell that she hung in a thong round her neck. Ngorongorui came back and cried,
"Sing!"
But the girl squealed like a plover.
"Sing!"
roared Ngorongorui again. But Tintiniani quacked like a duck.
"Sing!"
howled Ngorongorui for a third time. But Tintiniani only cried the sad cry of a gull. Though Ngorongorui roared in anger, Tintiniani closed her lips and would not open them again. The monster's anger shook the trees as if a storm wind blew. His breath dried the grasses as if the winter frost had passed over them. All the creatures of the bush, the plain, and the river crept away to hide, till not an ear or whisker could be seen. And still Tintiniani refused to open her mouth and sing. And far away in the hut at the foot of the mountain, Tintiniani's father and brothers waited for her. At evening, a great brown owl flew to them with the news that Tintiniani, she with the voice of the magic bird, was held prisoner by Ngorongorui in the forest. Then the father sent out his eldest son to fetch her back. The eldest son was so strong that with his bare hands he could turn aside the horn of a charging rhinoceros. He took no weapons with him as he set out across the plains to find his sister. Thank you. until he came to a deep, dark river. He plunged in and swam with mighty strokes, but he was only halfway across when the head of a huge crocodile rose and opened its mouth to crush him. As swiftly as a mamba strikes, the young man seized the crocodile's tail and thrust it into the gaping jaws. He turned to swim on over the river, but from all sides, the wicked yellow eyes of 100 more crocodiles came gliding towards him. The strong young man could fight one crocodile, but he was no match for 100. Sadly, he turned and swam ashore. He returned to his father's hut without Tintiniani. The next day, the father sent forth his second son. He was not as strong as his elder brother, but he was gifted with the fleetness of a springbuck, and not even the swift-leaping leopard could catch one who ran as an arrow from a bow. He took no weapons, for he trusted the swiftness of his feet to take him to Tintiniani. When he came to the river, he sprang nimbly over the backs of the crocodiles and ran on. But he hadn't gone far when he heard the howling of hyenas behind him. He turned this way and that with the speed of a hunted buck, but so great was the horde on his trail that he knew he could not escape them. He turned and ran home to his father without Tintiniani. As the third day dawned, the father sent out his youngest son to wrest Tintiniani from the clutches of Ngorongorui. Now the youngest son was not as strong as his eldest brother, nor as swift as the second, but he was as beautiful as the sunrise. Wherever he went, the eyes of all followed him and wondered at his shining skin and glowing eyes. Just like his brothers, he took no weapons, for he trusted to his beauty to cleave him a path through the plains and forest to his sister Tintiniani. Ran till into the river full of crocodiles. He stood on the bank and looked over the dark water. When the crocodiles saw his shining beauty, they left the river to lie on the banks and bask as if in the light of the sun. The boy told them he wished to cross the river, and the biggest crocodile of all offered to carry him across on his back. On the far bank, the boy bade him goodbye, and away he ran towards the forest where Tintiniani was hidden. It wasn't long before the hyenas came. But when the boy turned and looked at them with his glowing black eyes, they became as tame as dogs and fawned at his feet. So the beautiful boy ran on deep into the bushland until he came to the rhinoceros. Then he realized that his beauty would be as nothing to the short-sighted rhinoceros. Sadly, he turned and ran from them. As he came home, his father saw that even his third son could not bring back his beloved Tintiniani. Deep in the heart of the forest, Tintiniani sat, and no matter how Ngorongoro raged, how he roared or howled, he could not make her sing. Tintiniani, voice of the singing bird, was as silent as a stream run dry. Ngorongorui gave her no peace. When she rose at dawn, he growled, "Where is your voice of the magic songbird, Tintiniani?" All through the day he plagued her with, "Where have you hidden your voice, Tintiniani?" And at nightfall he howled, "Tell me, Tintiniani!" At last, Tintiniani knew that she must save herself from the monster. A clever plan came to her, and she said, "On the far side of the forest stands a great tree. Under the tree lies a stone, and under the stone is a pool of water. Deep, deep under the water, in the very middle of the earth, is a ball of fire. It is there, in the fireball, that I have hidden my voice." Then Ngorongorui rushed off through the forest to find the great tree. No sooner had he gone than the brave Tintiniani took her beautiful voice out of the nutshell and began to sing. She sang so joyously that fresh leaves sprouted on old trees. So enchanting was her song that white butterflies whirled from the treetops like snowflakes. So sweet was her voice that the tails of scorpions dripped honey. She sang as she walked home. The sharp-horned rhinoceros, tamed by her singing, stood as gently as cattle as she passed. The hunting hyenas frisked like dogs beside her. Thank you. until she stood on the banks of the deep, dark river. At the sound of her song, the crocodiles swam ashore and lay as tame as lizards under the rocks. Intiniani waded through the river, and the muddy waters became as clear as a mountain stream as she passed. Then her father and her brothers heard her as she came up from the river singing. With tears of joy, they ran to welcome her. They embraced her, and then together they took their things and climbed to the highest krantz. There they stood and gazed over the plains, the river, and the forest, to see if Ngorongorui was coming in pursuit of Tintiniani. But Ngorongorui never came, for he was busy digging up the roots of the great tree. He found the stone under the roots and hurled it high into the air. Down and down and down he dug, till he found the deep waters. And still he digs ever deeper and deeper into the dark earth, searching for the voice of Tintiniani. But the lovely singing of the girl rises free as a lark into the sky. It echoes sweetly in the kloof, and dances, dances, dances in the wind over the mountain.
Well, how about that? Tintiniani, performed by the National Symphony Orchestra, composed and conducted by Peter Klatso, with Yvonne Banning as narrator. The time is 9:10, and this is Fine Music Radio, broadcasting on a host of frequencies in and around Cape Town, and also online. In Composer of the Week tonight, we're celebrating the music of the late Peter Klatso, who left us 2.5 weeks ago. I mentioned that tonight's program would focus on Peter as composer, but what about Peter as pianist? Well, here's a recording, together with Jewel Richards, of fellow South African composer, sometimes described as the father of South African music, Arnold van Wyk. Van Wyk was born on a farm in Calvinia in 1916. His early musical opportunities were very limited, but eventually he was able to enter the music department at Stellenbosch University. He himself was an able pianist with a strong sense of keyboard color, and these three improvisations on Dutch folk songs for piano duet were composed during the Second World War and comprise To the Market, with its beguiling use of polymeters, the more somber Prayer for the Homeland, and finally, The Silver Fleet. a sparkling conclusion to the three improvisations on Dutch folk songs by Arnold van Wyk, played by our composer of the week, Peter Klatso, with Jill Richards. That was a piano duet. After returning to South Africa in the 1960s, Peter became a fixture at the South African College of Music at UCT, guiding new generations of composers and musicians. By then, Peter was also becoming increasingly fascinated with the poetry of the Xam people after encountering poet and colleague in the English department, Stephen Watson's book, Return to the Moon, in which Watson had recast material recorded by Lucy Lloyd through her interactions with a San prisoner. He'd been remanded from incarceration in jail to home service for Lloyd's uncle, Wilhelm Blake, the German linguist living in 19th century Cape Town. And together, Lloyd and Blake studied the Xam language and its poetry, preserving its legacy as the old ways were vanishing. Peter's growing attraction to this material led him to turn some of the translated Xam poetry into song cycles, and then later to turn Lloyd's experiences into a short and powerful one-act opera, Words from a Broken String. And it was upon hearing this work that my own story with Peter really began. For some reason, he would always refer to me as Woody, my nickname at school. I was so beguiled by this chamber opera that he'd written in 2010, its harmonic language and the subject matter, that later that year, I cheekily wrote to him and asked whether he would consider writing a choral work along similar lines for the UCT choir, which I was directing at that time, which he generously did, insisting, perhaps along the lines of his old teacher in Paris, that there would be no charge. I'll never forget joining him one stormy evening at his home in Miller Road in Claremont, an occasion for which he prepared the most wonderful curry and poppadoms when he handed over the recently completed score to me. Now, this is the sort of music that, for me as a choral conductor, is on my desert island list. And as the UCT choir, it was very special for us to be able to take this new music on tour to Port Elizabeth and Grahamstown in 2012. More recently, I've performed the works again with Vox at the Norval Foundation, and I'll always remember how graciously Peter joined us at that performance. And not only at the performance, but also at an open rehearsal beforehand, in which he shared with the singers and over 100 curious onlookers some of the background to these pieces. And so here is my own small musical tribute to Peter, We Who Are Stars, the first of his two songs for the Xam, settings of poems by the late Stephen Watson, as sung by the UCT Choir in 2011. The moon is cold, and is there not a full moon tonight? We Who Are Stars, the first of Peter Klatzow's two songs for the Klum, settings of poems by the late Stephen Watson, sung by the UCT choir. Peter's other major works include a full-length ballet on Hamlet, for which he was given a special Niederberg Award, concertos for piano, clarinet and organ, as well as a double concerto for flute and marimba, which was performed at Yale University. Other notable commissions include The World of Paul Klee III, composed for the opening of the new Paul Klee Center in Bern, Switzerland, a celebratory Te Deum for choir, organ and orchestra, commissioned for a special service celebrating the 100th anniversary of St. George's Cathedral, and Towards the Light, a work for double choir, marimba and organ, commissioned for the opening of the new Peabody Concert Hall in the USA in 2004. He was also commissioned by Samro to compose the setting of Thabo Mbeki's speech, I Am an African, for use in the International Vocal Scholarship Competition in 2011. That same year, he attended a festival of his marimba works in Tokyo, where he lectured at the Tokyo School of Music and gave masterclasses on his music and also received the Hubert Rupert Music Prize for his lifetime work. By now you've realized and heard that the marimba is an important instrument to Peter. He writes, I love the percussion section for itself. Its local references are useful, and I've enjoyed providing a repertoire for the marimba. The marimba, for me, is a concert rather than a traditional instrument. About his concerto for marimba, he writes, my concerto for marimba and string orchestra, written in 1985, was the second of three works which I've written for the American marimbist Robert Van Cise. I hope that it will be an important contribution to the repertoire of this exceptionally exciting and versatile instrument. The concerto is in the traditional three movements and is tonal throughout, but tonight we'll listen to just the final two movements. The second movement is a soliloquy for the soloist, while the third is a rhythmic and earthy toccata, which recalls the African and South American roots of the instrument. the final two movements of the Concerto for Marimba and String Orchestra, written in 1985 by Peter Klatso. There, Robert van Sais, the solo marimbist, with the Clermont String Orchestra conducted by Henri Garcia Asensio. In an obituary that appeared on the UCT website last month, it was written, Klatso had a profoundly innate talent and interest in music from an early age. His passion for composition and thirst for knowledge in music combined to create an extraordinary man who shared this knowledge with his students and friends alike. He achieved great success in his endeavors and earned many accolades and awards deserving of his stature and ability. But Klatso was more than just a sum of what he was passionate about. He was known for his quick wit, a natural flair with words, strong-willed, but also his ability to inspire and encourage. He had an intense, precise, organized nature, usually setting about composing at 4 a.m. every day with a coffee in hand and very rarely skipping a day. His ability to transcend his own musings profoundly affected his students and friends alike, and he liked to try to aid budding composers and musicians by nurturing their ability by sharing whatever he'd learnt and discovered. Klatso loved playing bridge and always found some reason to give a good grin, whether it was about the latest soufflé he'd conjured up or perhaps a resonant harmony or melodic contour he'd recently discovered. His big smile was infectious. We now listen to his three spiritual nocturnes, with words also taken from an African prayer book compiled by the late Desmond Tutu. The three movements are Night Silence, The Sun Has Disappeared, and An Evening Prayer. The first of these texts, Night Silence, was written by Father Harry Wiggett, and I was delighted to receive a voice note from him on Saturday morning mentioning that he'd heard that this program was going to be aired.
Hello, John. I heard your voice on FMR saying about the program you're doing on Peter's amazing life and musicianship and composing. I was so thrilled when he chose one of my poems to be one of the three spiritual nocturnes that was commissioned, and to have that music, it's just so lovely. And there was another one that the BBC commissioned called Our Song of Hope, and the BBC commissioned it, and Peter wrote, I wrote the words first, and then Peter composed the music around the words. And I'll never forget, it's, for me, that's the funny part of the story. I asked the BBC chaplain who was organizing that, I said, when it had been recorded in St. George's Cathedral, I was there to hear them do that, which was absolutely wonderful. It's a lovely piece that Peter composed. And I said, now, what about my commission? They said, oh, no, no, the person who writes the words doesn't get anything because it's being used as part of a church service. I said, but you commissioned it. He said, yes, that's right, but you don't get anything because it's being used as part of a church service. And I said, the composer, he said, that's another situation. But the words are, and you know, very often I find it's only the composer who's mentioned when something is being sung, and not the writer of the words. But that was, in fact, it was quite a sweet little story tied up with Chris Trivers and all the rest of it. But sorry, I just had to, when I heard you doing that program, I just wanted to share with you some of my joys with Peter.
And Father Harry very kindly agreed to let me share them with you too. So here now are the three spiritual nocturnes composed by Peter Klatso, sung by Chanticleer, directed by Richard Koch. The second and third poems are taken from Ghana and Kenya respectively, but I encourage you to take special notice of the words of the first, Night Silence, composed by Father Harry. Lord of light, help me to know that you are also Lord of night. And by your choice, when all is dark and still and stark, you use your voice.
Thank you.
A live recording of the Three Spiritual Nocturnes by Peter Klatso, sung by Chanticleer, directed by Richard Koch, with words by Father Harry Wiggett and prayers from Ghana and Kenya. In 1986, Peter was elected to the rank of UCT Fellow for having performed original, distinguished academic work of such quality as to merit special recognition. He was awarded a DMus for published work in composition in 1999 and the Cape Tercentenary Foundation's Maltino Gold Medal for lifetime achievement in music in 2002. One of the few South African composers to achieve international recognition, Peter has won prizes in Spain, the UK and Canada, and his works have been performed all over the world. In South Africa, he was awarded the prestigious Helgard Steyn Prize for his piano suite From the Poets, and again for his work Lightscapes. And we've touched only briefly on his role as teacher, mentor, pianist and friend, or even on his role on the station, promoting interesting contemporary and local music for years. In fact, Peter was on the panel when FMR granted me a voice audition back in 2006. We give the last word of this tribute program to Peter, who introduces the second movement from his suite, From the Poets. As a composer, I have always enjoyed writing program music. Nurtured on a diet of Longfellow, which my grandmother recited by heart, the storyteller instinct was born early and has never gone away, and which I hope you'll agree we've heard tonight. Although the individual pieces of this cycle have each been inspired by a particular poem, it would not pay to search for any line-by-line musical illustration of the contents. I've drawn freely on the structure and imagery of the original poems to create their musical counterparts. In Days Approaching Winter, Phil Duplessis' set of seven miniatures depict the quiet waters of Cork Bay as the days shorten towards winter. It becomes clear that the idyllic setting must lead to a mood of greater austerity, and the music, too, must reflect the somber journey. Thank you for joining me on FMR tonight for the special tribute program to the late Peter Klatso. From his piano suite entitled From the Poets, played by Jill Richards, here is Days Approaching Winter. Take care and good night.